Welcome to Follow the Sound. I am your host, Brian Kroc. Each week we explore different albums for an album review, and this week will be no different. Of course, you know, last week my two co-hosts went on without me while I was on vacation and did two different album reviews, which were amazing. Go and listen to them, and I'm sure you will be entertained. It's just that I'm glad to be back doing my thing, doing these album reviews. But, of course, along with me is my co-host, Jacob Crum.
Because nobody wanted to play bass, I was instantly in a band.
And we've brought on another special friend of ours, Carl Stegeman.
Hola, I play the drums.
No, I play the drums. You?
Okay, no, I'll play my guitar.
You play the guitar,
I'll
Jake
play
plays
guitar
bass.
I'll be a basic white bitch.
There you go. So, our good friend Carl here has brought on an album that we are going to be reviewing here. But before I get to that, I want to say, if you like our show and you want to help us out, you can go to followthesoundpodcast.com and you can click on the Amazon banner, or you can go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. It'll take you to Amazon. You can do all of your shopping. It won't cost you anything extra. And we get a little bit of money back. It's just a great way to help support the show. And it only will take you a couple more seconds to do instead of typing in Amazon.com. So once again, you can go to the website, click on the Amazon banner, or you can go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. Also, if you want to check out other great podcasts, you can go to lineupmedia.fm and find a bunch of different great shows out there. We've got other music shows like Celtic Music Lab. We've got weird shows like Surreal Talk. If you happen to be Armenian and you're listening to this, we've got a bunch of shows that you can go listen to. Ani Vibes, you can listen to Armenian Nights Radio or Armenia Proud. All three great shows dealing with some fascinating topics and great comedy from Armenian Nights. Those dudes are hilarious. But yeah, good stuff. Go check them out. Lineupmedia.fm, fantastic programming that we hope you will enjoy. But now we are on to our album review here on Follow the Sound. And Carl, you brought us an album that I've never listened to.
I'm honestly surprised you haven't listened to it.
I say this numerous times when somebody's like, I can't believe you've never listened to that. I only have so much time in this world.
I know.
I can't listen to everything, but Lord knows I wish I could.
I'm just being a little facetious.
Okay. I understand that. Okay. So Carl here, though, is a good friend of ours going back several years now. He's a bit younger than us, but he is a kindred spirit when it comes to this world of music that we thoroughly enjoy and that we love to discuss and talk about. But when I asked Carl if he wanted to come on, because of course I like bringing my friends on, I said, go ahead and bring an album. And he's brought us an album that I am actually really looking forward to listening to because I've never heard it before. And I love that experience of listening to something for the first time. Jake did it when he brought in Tom Waits and it blew my mind. And so, like, I'm looking forward to going through this one. Carl, what have you brought for us today?
Well, it's funny you bring up Tom Waits. He's actually got a connection with this band. This is Primus's Frizzle Fry from 1989.
That's going back.
Yeah, I know. The days before Carl. a brighter time.
BK, before Carl. Yes, his name is spelled with a K, folks.
I am not a Burger King, but there was a time before me.
Hey, those are my initials, Brian Kroc.
There you go. This is why we just need to make BK the band, and we'll be set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Okay. I was serious that night. So this is Primus's first album, as I mentioned. This came out in 1989. Jake, I don't know if you've actually listened to any of the stuff on this album or not before.
I have not listened to this album in particular, but I think at some point I own Suck on This, which was like the live, a little bit like a demo plus.
Yeah.
Was it an EP?
I believe it was a live EP. I believe that had Putting Time on it at least. And
John the Fisherman. Oh, yeah, a few more.
And Harold the Rocks probably.
Maybe. I don't think so. I think it had Frizzle Fry on it too.
Either way,
go ahead.
Yeah, no. So this is like one of my favorite albums. It's not how I was introduced to Primus, mm-hmm. but I like to actually, like, I'm very much a history nut when it comes to my music, so if I'm going to introduce other people to something, I like to go back to the beginning if I can, or at least what I consider, what's best to start with. This
So here's my question then. Who is Primus?
Primus is a very wacky band out of San Francisco. It's made up of Les Claypool on bass and vocals, Larry Lalonde on guitar, and in this rendition, my personal favorite of their drummers, Tim Herb, in air quotes, Alexander on drums. I've seen him play with the band live twice, and he is one of the most fluid drummers I've ever heard in my life. Mm. I honestly think you'd really enjoy him, just because it doesn't sound mechanical, you know?
Yeah.
It's got a very, very nice, I hesitate to say legato, but it's got a very nice flow to it it just feels like a natural energy. It's not like, you know, like this is, you know, insert drum machine here kind of thing.
Yeah.
The guy is amazing. Yeah, he played on albums for years. He's actually not the original drummer of the band. The original drummer, Jay Lane, came back and played with them on the Green Naugahyde tour, which was the first time I saw them in 2012. He left the band shortly before they recorded this album, but I believe he actually might have been on some of the tracks on Suck on This, Jake.
Okay.
Because he was playing live with them at the time, and then he left and played off with another band called Sausage, which him and Claypool had founded together. Claypool originally played with another band called Blind Illusion, which is this kind of... I don't really know how to describe it. It's a very... It's like a more of a metal kind of feel, but it's got that funk little influence to it. And Larry Lalonde actually is credited as being one of the godfathers of death metal, being with the band Possessed when he was 19 or 20, played on an album called Seven Churches. And that's like supposedly, I don't listen to death metal much myself, but I know that that's apparently one of the iconic like starts of the genre, at least for America. And then Claypool approached him about coming on to Primus because he was just looking for a guitar player. He didn't, you know, it wasn't anything specific. It wasn't like, oh, I need this guy because he has this specific style or anything. He just was looking for somebody to jam with, and they were pretty cool with each other, I guess. So, and I think that's what I like so much about them. They're just, like, if you ever get a chance to see them live on stage, like, they're very relaxed, but their music is incredible, in my opinion.
I dig it.
Yeah. So, the first track actually has one of my favorite lyrics in their history, which the name of the track is "To Defy the Laws of Tradition," and the quote goes on to say, "Is a crusade only of the brave," and I think that kind of is the essence of the band in a way, because they're very different, but they've always kept true to themselves. And I know that sounds all hipstery or whatever, but I don't know, I can appreciate when, you know, someone just kind of does their own thing, and you know, other people can enjoy it. So,
does that mean you want to get on to the first track of the album?
Yeah, I think we should. I'll let you know when to cut it. It's all good.
Well, I'm just saying.
I'll wave at you.
What's the first track?
That's the name. It's "To Defy the Laws of Tradition."
All right. So this is
it's track one.
Track one.
Track one. Thank you.
Well, that was very interesting. That was not where I was expecting that to actually go.
To define interesting.
Well, I mean, it was kind of, you know, like the intro part there was just vastly different than what I was expecting in the first place. And then it went to something that I wasn't expecting at all
Based on the intro?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like...
No, they're all over.
All over the place.
And, but, I don't know, I really do appreciate their whole little getup, because it's just they just kind of sit around and they jam on whatever, and it's just, you know, does this sound good with this? Sure, let's go for it. I don't know, it's that's also the opening track on their greatest hits album before Green Naugahyde came out. This was they had an 11-year hiatus before that album came out after the Brown album, and their greatest hits was They Can't All Be Zingers, and it has To Defy the Laws of Tradition, I believe it has Too Many Puppies, and John the Fisherman, all from this album on that. And that's... you both know my name is Mud.
Yes.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, so I got my parents to listen to that originally about the time I was 15. A friend of mine in high school and I... we were handed a hard drive of 500 gigabytes of... just any and all music, basically, and it dated. It was various things dating back to the '60s and up through like the early '90s, and it was handed to us by the deacon at our local church, promoting, I guess, the illegal music or whatever. I don't know, but it had pretty much, you know, REM's discography was on there, Radiohead, White Stripes, Primus's discography was on there, and I introduced my parents to My Name Is Mud, and my dad like. My dad was a drummer in high school, and he doesn't get as much of a chance to go out and do it as much as he wants to anymore, but he, like, fell in love with a few of the tracks on the Primus' Greatest Hits album, and that wasn't actually one of them initially, but he went back and listened to it about 2 years later, and he was just like, okay, like, it just, I think that, like you said, the changes, they just kind of hit you.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. I think that's what I've always... I like the sporadic action of it all. It's almost like this musical ADD kind of thing going on.
Nice.
And I don't know if that makes any sense.
I get it. Yeah. But speaking of that...
Yes.
Let's move on to track number two, which is called...
Groundhog's Day.
Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
Yes, man.
Some amazing, like, intricacies there.
Oh, yeah. I really appreciate how Claypool plays triplets. He has a very kind of... He kind of sways them a little bit. He puts a little swing on them. And it's just this really interesting, like, roles that you get out of it. And I've watched a lot of interviews with him. And he describes himself more as a percussive bassist than, like, a, I guess... melodic or...
The thing that I find interesting about the way that they're playing is that they're sort of this dissonance between the bass and the guitar.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost as if they were like, okay, all right, we're perfectly in tune. I'm going to adjust this just the slightest fraction of an inch.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, okay, now we're not perfectly in tune with each other, and this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
At the same time, I mean, I'm listening to this, and it was recorded in 89, right?
Yes.
Like, obviously, the production quality could go up, but it's one of these things where you really get a good sense of the group.
Yeah.
What they were shooting for.
Oh, for sure. And honestly, that's I'm glad you actually brought up like the quality of the recording, because that's part of the reason I really enjoy the opening of the album itself, is because it kind of, if you listen to it, it's kind of got those cracks and pops in it. It sounds like it's almost like straight off like a vinyl record.
Mm-hmm.
And it I don't know, that's just, it makes me feel kind of at home in a way. But no, the Groundhog's Day, that guitar line is one of my favorite of Larry's, because it's just the shifts between the that last note on the end of the lick when he just holds it in the right spot.
Does that guitar line sound familiar to you at all, Brian?
No, why?
Because it really should.
Why?
Because Larry Lalonde actually played guitar for the intro and intro music for Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Oh, nice.
You know what else Primus did, though?
South Park.
Yes, the South Park opening.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was them. They were on a Beavis and Butthead album at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like they're...
That's right up their alley, yeah.
They were all over the place. But yeah, no. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, you're right. They're about the Space Ghost Coast to Coast. Thanks for bringing that up. I was trying to find a quote. I don't remember who said it, but somebody once described their music, I believe, is, and I don't remember the exact quote, but effectively, like, a heavier form of Don Knotts or something like that. And it fit a little too well. Les Claypool, I know, Jake, you were talking with me about this earlier, actually. After Cliff Burton of Metallica died in the bus accident, what was that? Was it like 82, 83, something like that?
Your guess is as good as mine.
I don't remember. It was early to mid-80s.
It was before Injustice for All.
Yeah, that's all that matters. I miss Cliff Burton. But no, apparently, I believe it was James Hetfield actually went to high school with Les Claypool of Primus, and this was before he had Primus, which was Primate, before it was Primus. They changed their name. I'm not actually sure why. Never really found a reason, but I guess it sounded more official. James Hetfield approached him to replace Burton for the bass tracks for Metallica, and he goes in, and you hear how he's playing.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing that kind of stuff like at a Metallica audition, all right? And they just kind of like... They claim they were blown away in a VH1 interview, but... Les has said many times that was very humble of them to say. I think he thinks that he kind of freaked him out at one point. At one point, after he was done playing, he asked him if they wanted to go back to his house and smoke a joint and jam on some Isley Brothers tunes. And they all just kind of were very baffled and confused. Like, none of them knew what to say to him. Like, that's just the kind of guy he is. Very down to earth. I really enjoy watching and listening to interviews with him for that very reason, because he's always throwing sarcastic comments around. And but yeah, so
I like it. But what do we got next?
Can we actually go on to? Let's actually. You know what? Just play track three. I'm sorry. Just
track
play
track three. Number three, which is called
Too Many Puppies.
Too many puppies, a big shot. shot in the dark. Too many puppies. I'd say not too bad. The sign of my dad must be still to the women and they are oil pills. Too many puppies. Too many puppies. Too many puppies.
Okay, so this may be the closest that we'll ever get to actually playing a Captain Beefheart album on this show.
Oh, man.
Captain Beefheart.
Which is somewhat unfortunate, but yeah,
I
that
love
his vocals really remind me of Beefheart right there.
That's honestly, that's how he talks, too.
Yeah.
That's just how that's how he sounds. He just kind of got that, he kind of got a little bit of that twang going on. Just,
for a second, I thought he was saying too many poppies.
Well, you know.
Like poppy seeds?
Like, oh, poppy.
Poppy fields.
You know, like Latino.
Oh, Latino poppy. Granddad.
Wow, that is a much.
Too
much,
many granddads.
That's a much different song right there, man. That everything in context.
It's okay. The first time my mom heard my name is Mud, she heard my name is Malip. And I'm like, what? So she thought that was the actual lyric for the longest time. And I'm like, what's a Malip? And she goes, I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
I do enjoy all the misheard lyrics. Those,
oh, no. It's
those are always fun.
Yeah, I don't. That's not one of my favorite songs on the album. I do really like just the constant 16ths on the hi-hat and it just like, you know, the guitar and the bass just rolling right under that. That's actually a war protest song.
Really?
Yeah. Again.
In Primus's weird way.
Yeah, it's not one of my favorites of theirs, but... it's like, you know, how much blood must be spilled so we can maintain these oil spills or whatever he's just said. I don't actually know the proper lyric. I've never looked them up. But I know that's the history of the song is that it is a anti-war song, which I thought was very interesting because I was not expecting that from them. A good friend of mine who was actually more of a Primus fan than I am back in high school, another friend had told me that at one point, and I was like, I was very confused. But no, you mentioned Tom Waits earlier, Brian.
Yes, because we did a Tom Waits review.
Yeah, which album was that again?
Jake, which album did we do?
Mule Variations.
Oh,
yes, that's
damn,
right.
Damn, son. Yeah, that's a good one.
And I would like to point out that to this day, it is still our most downloaded episode.
Oh, nice.
Like, the fans of Tom Waits went crazy when we posted that, and I loved it because they loved... the fact that it was like my first experience of Tom Waits, like really listening to an album. So hopefully
Tom's,
we can get a similar experience.
Tom
with,
is fantastic.
With Primus. Cause I'm sure Primus fans are going to be like super psyched about this.
Well, Primus is one of the few bands that I actually know a lot of more of the history on. Cause I went out and sought out the actual information. So the second album they put out, Sailing the Seas of Cheese, it's not this one. I'm sorry guys, has Tommy the Cat. And Les was asked by the producer of the album who he wanted to get to voice the character. And he's like, well, I mean, that's, you know, Tom Waits just makes sense because it kind of fit with the whole thing. Tommy the Cat's actually supposed to be Thomas O'Malley from Aristocats.
Oh, okay. Nice.
That's the character he's based off of. But Tom Waits voices him in the original track on Sailing the Seas of Cheese. And later on, he was in a track on the Antipop album. I believe it was the Antipop album. It was On the Coattails of a Dead Man. He does backing vocals, and they're very it's like a funeral procession kind of sound, and he's got this very eerie like sound to it. It's just the best.
Have you heard the version of Tommy the Cat that's on Suck on This?
I actually haven't heard that particular version.
It's weird because it's a different arrangement completely.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's a little bit slower.
That's the thing.
And,
that's what I love about seeing. If you ever get a chance to see them live,
yeah.
They change up everything that they do because they constantly change the music and kind of keep it this ever flowing thing, which I can really respect because then you definitely know they're not just, you know, because you get a lot of this stuff where people complain about it. It's like, looks like they're lip syncing. You don't get that at a Primus show. Like, you know they're playing. Tom Waits also has actually had Les Claypool on. I'm not sure if you've listened to, is it Far Gone? Is that the album? Real Gone. Yeah,
he's on like five different albums. I think the first one he was on was might have been Mule Variations with Big in Japan.
Yeah. I think Larry played on that album as well. But the song that always comes to mind for me is Hoist That Rag off of Real Gone.
Yeah. I love that track.
That's a Claypool line on the he plays the bass on that. You know, like they're apparently really good friends from what I understand. And then as long as we're talking about that kind of stuff, I think it's important to mention that I mentioned the lineup earlier where it's the bassist and and vocalist, and then you have a guitar player, the guitarist and the drummer. You know, who does that remind you of, you know?
That reminds me of Rush.
Exactly. That is like Les Claypool's biggest inspiration is Geddy Lee. He actually played a cover of Spirit of Radio on their induction to the Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. If you ever get a chance, you should check that out. It's pretty good. I could go on for hours. But track five, we're going to skip Mr. Know-It-All. I enjoy that track, but it's not the best. It's not the best. You listen to it on your own time. It's got one of my favorite like funny lyrics in it though. Frizzle Fry, track five, is the title track of the album, and it's, I guess, creepier than the rest of the album.
Let's give it a listen. Gotta say, I like that one probably the most so far.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I can't explain it. Just sort of the weird percussive nature of it.
It's got this strange kind of rhythm to it.
But I like the fact that it's slower than some of the other stuff that's been played so far. And like, I mean, I like it when they're doing the crazy fast stuff, but like, I like that a lot because, you know, the drums were very accentuated, and what he was playing on bass, it wasn't just like, you know, he's playing like weird fast stuff. It's like he's playing all these cool chords and like that. I really enjoyed that song. That was good.
Yeah, I saw Jake was singing along with it.
Yeah, this was on Suck on This, but I didn't recognize it from the intro because the arrangement, again, is very different. And the cadence of the... I think that the speed of the song, like the rhythm of the song, is about the same, but the cadence of the vocals is much faster.
Really?
Yeah. So, okay. Like, I remember the intro as probably the first Primus song I ever heard. C.J. Johnson, my neighbor, played it for me.
Oh, nice.
You know, hello, all you boys and girls. I'd like to take it to you. Yes, I was. It's quite a regular place to be, but never fear. You're safe with me. And then, well, anyway, it was a much, yeah.
That's one of my favorite lines.
This arrangement here reminds me a lot more of, like, Les Claypool with Oysterhead.
Oh, yeah. Which is Stuart Copeland and Trey Anastasio.
Yeah. Which is almost a band specifically designed to piss off Primus fans by opening for Primus. Or at least that's my theory on the band.
Because
why in the hell else would you have a guitarist who literally plays like an elk antler? They uncoiled a pickup.
Have you listened?
And strung it through an elk's antler.
Yeah.
And now that's an
that's
instrument.
That's the guitar. Yeah.
It's like a really low rent theremin.
I'm not a huge Phish fan. I'm not gonna lie. I appreciate some of their earlier stuff. You know, when they were on acid. But Stuart Copeland actually came through for Primus whenever the Antipop came around. Mm-hmm. They were having some budgeting issues, and he actually produced, I believe, a good portion of the album. And listening to him play with Claypool, if you ever get a chance to listen to the Oysterhead album, the opening track, Little Faces, it just opens with Copeland just doing these like crazy rhythms, and then Claypool just comes in with this like nice little bass riff, and it's just perfect. I'm a diehard fan. I'm a Claypool fan.
But I can't take it. I can't wait any longer because the next track is my favorite Primus like riff.
Yeah.
So
and Brian, you'll probably like the drums in this one too.
Yeah,
a lot.
This is John the Fisherman.
I do love this song.
So there you go. That was John the Fisherman, and I love that song because it is a funkadelic song that George Clinton never bothered to record. Like everything about that is just a really good funk song.
Oh yeah, for sure. No,
that drum part in the beginning though was so good.
Yeah, no, that's again Tim Alexander. One of like
I really want to know like what his setup was for recording this. Like,
I don't know how they mic him. His kit's huge now. I got the chance to see them. Actually, compliments, Brian, to your lovely wife.
Yes,
who hooked me and. Okay, so I get a message from her on Facebook about 2 or 3 weeks before they had a show, and I believe 2015. I think it was.
Yeah.
And it was when they were on the Willy Wonka tour, and I get a message from your wife, and she's like, "Hey, I got you two tickets to Primus," and it's on. And I'm like, "Okay, when's the show?" And then it was a Wednesday night. And
yeah, it was down the street. Yeah,
the Peabody. Yeah, and that is a wonderful venue for them, by the way.
Oh, I love it.
I've seen them there twice. I saw them with Tool when they toured through the Chaffetz. I didn't like that venue as much for their particular sound. And, like, the Peabody kind of fits their aesthetic in a way, too. It's really strange because, you know, Claypool's always wearing these kind of, like, fancy vests and bowler yeah. caps and all this. But
I've seen a bunch of good shows there.
Oh, yeah.
But last year, I think I only made it there once, and mm-hmm. it was to see Brian Regan.
Nice.
Which was great. So.
But yeah, I get the message from your wife, and so I call my mom, and I'm down in Carbondale for school at this point, and I'm like, so I'm going to be coming up and crashing at the house, you know, because there's a Primus concert next Wednesday. And she's like, well, don't you have school? And I'm like, well, I've got another ticket that's got your name on it if you want to go. And she's like, oh, okay. So, like, no further questions about, you don't need to study or anything. Like, I'll go to Primus with you. So I got my mother to go to a Primus show with me.
Nice.
And so they played one of my favorite tunes of theirs, which I honestly, it's my favorite of the drum lines they ever did. And it's they had Tim for the first time on tour with them after like 13 years.
Yeah.
And the song is called Over the Electric Grapevine. It's off of Tales from the Punch Bowl, which I believe was actually the last album he recorded with them previously. Previous to the Willy Wonka cover album. And he played like a good 7 or 8 minute solo. And it was just it was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had. Then I went out and saw them the next year, January of 2017, my bad. So that 2 years later, I saw them when they came through in the Chaffetz with Tool, and they opened for them. And I'm listening to Tool, and I'm really into Tool as well. But Danny Carey comes out, and he does his drum solo and everything. And I just wasn't as into it, because it was this very, like, calculated and, you know, it's like, now, oh, look.
Drum solos, to me, are boring.
Tim's, though? It never bored me for a second.
Like, I know. On the music history episode that we did, we talked about Neil Peart and, like, all that kind of stuff. I watched Neil Peart's drum solos, and I'm like, I already knew you were awesome. Like, you didn't need to do
right.
this. And I've seen some bands where the drummer does a drum solo, and if I can actually follow it, it's not impressive to me.
Okay, that's fair.
Because I know my level as a drummer, and I know it's like I'm an above average drummer. I'm not a great drummer by any stretch. I'm not like a brilliant drummer or anything. It's like, but I know that if I can follow what they're doing and I reasonably like could copy it. Jake just hit the mic with his headphones. It's perfectly fine. It's like, but if I can copy it, then I feel like, what's the point? I can do this.
That's fair.
But I would like to see.
Well, yeah, like
this,
Tim,
this guy's drum solo, just to see, like, because if he's able to take, like, what he does on this album, even, like,
oh, yeah.
and just, like, translate that into a drum solo, I would be greatly impressed with it. Because there were some hits that he was doing on the previous song
mm-hmm.
that were, like, some of the triple bass hits that he was doing that
oh, yeah.
sound amazing because they were so freaking precise. It was da-da-da-da. I mean, it was, like, just, it was perfect.
Oh, you'll,
and I know a lot of people can't hear that because
right.
a lot of people aren't you know, trained drummers or percussionists or whatever. Like, and your average, like, listener isn't going to be listening to it like a drummer would,
mm-hmm.
but it was not only precise, it was a perfect hit
right
each time, which is amazing in and of itself.
Yeah. And like, and the way his solos go, they're almost melodic in a way, which from my drumming experience, which is not nearly as much as yours, obviously. But I have a very hard time doing anything, you know, cause like making anything sound, you know, other than, you know, just like, oh, here's this basic, like, rhythm. Like, it's so hard to break out of that for me as a drummer. So, like, mm-hmm. when I'm listening to the stuff that Tim puts out, I'm just like, that's my goal, you know? Like, that's what I'd like to
yeah.
be at. If you really like the drum hits in that, the drum line in Spaghetti Western track 11 you're really going to like later on.
Yeah.
That's one of the few songs that my dad, whenever he drummed back in high school and all that, he listened to that and he was just blown away by just how he's able to keep the same rhythm and just continues with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's nuts.
All right, so what are we moving on to?
Okay, so track 7 is it's just a little kind of like this interlude thing, but it flows very well into track 8, and track 8's kind of become personal to me in a way. Track 8 is The Toys Go Winding Down, and track 7 is You Can't Kill Michael Malloy. There's no lyrics to the track 7, it's just this little ditty, but it flows into track 8, so just go ahead and play it in.
All right, here, track 7, You Can't Kill Michael Malloy, and The Toys Go Winding Down. That was amazing, actually.
I love that song.
I know we were talking like while it was playing there, but yeah, that was fascinating to listen to, just because like we said, the bass and the bass drum were so like tightly synced for those hits.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we were trying to figure out exactly how he was playing those notes or those hits on the bass. It's like, because
I'll have to look that
I don't,
up.
I honestly don't believe that somebody with like using two fingers could do that. It like they've got to be using a third finger or the thumb or something to do those types of triple hits that he's doing. I mean, I guess it's possible, but that's to be able to like kind of pluck like that, it would
mm-hmm.
like I don't think it works.
I would, if I was listening to that, if you told me that was a new album, I would suspect that it was an Ebo with mutes.
Mm.
Yeah.
But considering this was recorded in 89 and released in 90,
mm-hmm.
Don't know.
Yeah, there's actually a part later in that song that I really appreciate that it's one of the few times he actually pulls out a double bass in the earlier mm-hmm. stuff, and he plays a line on a double bass, and then he doubles it again over
okay, yeah,
with the actual with his plucking the electric. No, that song really has resonated with me a lot more personally in the last year or so, actually since I've gotten out of college, because from what I kind of gathered from the lyrics, the whole thing's kind of this, you know, this allegory, I guess, for like growth or maybe even forced growth in a way. And I've like, you know, any time that I hit like, you know, kind of a rough patch, which has there've been a few, whenever I hit kind of a rough patch with, you know, work or, you know, just like the fact that I'm trying to be an adult and not really knowing how to do that yet and all this other stuff, because you don't learn how to be an adult in college, let's face it. But this song is like usually what I go to, because it's just like, you know, it's like you know, come on, time to grow up, like gotta kind of kick start it. I don't know, it's so that it resonates with me on a personal level, but also just that you know, between the bass line and the drums and everything, it's such a well-synced song.
Yes.
So
also it sounds like that's a track that came out of like everyone just doing like exercises at the same time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like everyone's definitely. Just warming up at the same time, and somebody was like, "Hey, push record, will you?" on that four track that's over there.
just hit that button.
And also, for whatever reason, like halfway through that, I started like doing the chorus lyrics from Kendrick Lamar's "Humble" to those triplets.
I could see it.
Yeah. So either way, that was what's going on.
The next Kendrick Lamar and/or Primus album.
Yeah. Featuring these crazy bastards.
I mean, I know. I know I'm not like the biggest hip hop person.
Yes.
But actually that combination, I think
that'd be pretty fun.
Of like Primus and a rapper would be kind of amazing.
And Logic.
Well, they're a very rhythmic based band.
And actually I think Kendrick Lamar would probably be the perfect choice for them, because he's weird.
Him and Les's vocals would go together pretty well.
I could see that.
Well, you heard it here first, folks.
Best concept album. We have ever come up with.
What's coming up next?
Pudding time.
Pudding time.
Just go right into it.
I'd prefer straight vanilla, but
it's pudding time.
Vanilla pudding?
Yeah.
You're the most boring individual I've
ever like vanilla said, ice you cream? Could say he's vanilla.
What's so wrong with vanilla?
No, I just he was just giving crap about vanilla
it's
ice
like,
cream.
That's like never mind. Vanilla pudding. It's not even cold enough to be ice cream.
I like vanilla ice cream.
Like
I like vanilla pudding.
Right.
Let the man eat his
it's
pudding.
It's more boring than vanilla,
I like vanilla
ice cream.
Shakes,
now you can
saying.
Have your pudding and eat it too.
I don't believe vanilla is boring.
So, see, I feel like the phrase should be you can eat your pudding and have it too. It's like
that's
you
fair.
Can have and eat. Anyway.
I'm just saying that
just
vanilla is a complex taste.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That people just don't get. They don't understand its complexity.
Yeah, you did. We were talking about Primus.
You're talking about like a bean pod,
yes,
you know, that grows in certain areas, you know, that has to be like plucked by hand.
Yes.
You know, and...
And has become synonymous the world over for boring, generic flavor.
Which is stupid.
Is it now?
Yes, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, then.
It is.
I happen to agree with that sentiment.
But you know what's not boring? Mm-hmm. That song.
That is true.
What'd you think about that double bass there, Brian?
That was pretty crazy. Just that
straight all the time. I just really like that track for its energy.
Double bass pedals like really are amazing just in general.
No, mechanically, yeah, for sure.
That's one of the reasons why I like metal.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, where people can utilize it in a great way.
Yeah.
And even just that, what he's doing right there, I can't do that.
I've tried.
I've never been great at double bass pedals. So
I kind of think metal is losing the double bass pedal.
No, it's not.
No, because a lot of them are programmed. Like a lot of them, I'm hearing just sampled stuff now rather than actually having a drummer that can pull it off.
And I think
because it's not easy.
I think that's part of the thing that's so interesting about going back and listening to groups like Primus, though, is like they're. Just the level of skill that it's three guys. Like, I didn't believe that for the longest time. Like, there's no way
there's
got to
be some session musicians in there,
right? And there were on the with the Willy Wonka tour, they actually had an orchestra, a tiny orchestra, play like as ensemble to them, but the first half of the show it was just the three of them playing their old hits, and I'm just it's amazing. I like track 10 because the lyrics are kind of fun. And then go ahead and play a little bit into track 11, Brian, because I think you're really going to like the drum loop in this one.
All right. So which ones are these again?
This is track 10 to Sethington Willoughby, and track 11 is Spaghetti Western.
We are gathered here today in these majestic halls of all to honor a man named Go Sethington Will. Sethington Willoughby, legislator, that penned us up a bill that banned the use of certain things like this and that, 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 this. Still writing.
What did I just listen to?
Spaghetti Western.
Oh,
Primus.
My goodness.
I thought you'd like the drum loop, though.
I did love the drums. Actually, the thing that I loved about it was that he does the fill on the toms, and then he comes back in with the double bass, but the double bass retards ever so slightly at the end before coming back onto the snare. Mm-hmm. But the thing that's actually cracking me up about the entire beat, if you go back and listen to it, is that he's hitting the hi-hat like two times in between the fills. And so it's like, you know, like just completely offbeat from like everything else.
But it works. Like.
Yeah, it does.
I kept it, like, if I was listening to a drummer play that, I would keep expecting them to mess it up eventually. And he doesn't.
Yeah, that track goes on for 5.5 minutes.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, no. What do you guys think of those lyrics, though? I'm curious.
What's the line that he said at the end of the, like, I guess the verse? I guess I'm still writing.
Yeah. It's just like a spoken, I assume it was just kind of a, like an offhand thing that he just like had in a journal somewhere.
I guess so. I mean, either way, I enjoyed it. It was fascinating to listen to him talk about it. It's like a little tiny glimpse into the mind of
Les Claypool.
Les Claypool.
Sometimes he really nails it with the narrative of a story in his lyrics, and other times you get Spaghetti Western.
I don't know. I love the lyrics in that song, though, because I'm just like, it's just like, I think we've all had those days.
To the listeners, you couldn't see, but Carl was like acting out the lyrics.
For those of you playing the home game.
So one of these days when we ever get cameras on us, we can show people, which will be hilarious.
Oh, man.
That'll be
fun.
We
can't do that. Then people will see our edits, Brian.
Oh, so what? It's not that big a deal.
Either way.
I was just telling Brian, actually, that's one of the first Primus bass lines I ever actually learned how to play. It was that and like Southbound Pachyderm, which is also on Sales from the Punch Bowl, same mm-hmm. album as Over the Electric Grapevine, just, you know, stuff like that. I cannot successfully play the bass line to Defy the Laws of Tradition. I can't play it the right way. Mm. I can kind of play it, but I've watched yeah. footage of him play it live, and he plays, this was the first track I'm referencing again, he plays that entire line with his thumb. And he's just, like, striking chords, and he, like, throws, like, ghost notes and stuff in there. And I'm like, just how are you even, like, doing that? Les Claypool's got this, and Brian, you mentioned he's got, the intricacy that you enjoy the intricacy.
Yes.
But how did you explain it? I'm sorry. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Well, I mean, I guess you could get to this a little bit later on down the line. Let's get through the album first, I'll give my actual review of the album. Okay.
Okay. No. Sorry.
So what do we got next?
So we've got Herald of the Rocks coming up next. I really do enjoy this one too. I know Jake, you've heard this one before.
Yeah.
All right.
Is this another one that fades into the track 13?
Okay. Well, track 13. I'll talk about that one separately. I'll talk about it right now because it does kind of just go in. You know what? I'll talk about it after. I'm sorry. Just go. Just play
go
12.
Go for it.
Play 12. It was a I was looking for something to see. With a bar of black leather and my best fishing hat. Well, it was just with the old and me. Calling swamp upon telephone said we was coming on down to Plymouth. Lady said, hey, Snappy, me and Rain, come along, but if we can bring a friend. His name is Harold. Stanley Harold.
talk balls off a rhinosaurus. Fact is, it just doesn't make much sense. Well, Stan, this guy's pretty bizarre, Gus.
Rhinosaurus?
Yeah, you can talk the balls off a rhinosaurus. Don't you know?
Talk the balls off a rhinosaurus.
This guy's pretty bizarre, Gus.
Harold.
Harold of the Rocks. It's just a nice goofy little tune. It's no Winona's Big Brown Beaver, but it's quite up there.
Very few songs are
Winona's Big Brown Beaver. Yes. I tried singing that at a karaoke night once and just completely failed. I cannot properly sing as Claypool does, and it was also like all this like very generic MIDI. It didn't sound right. And I'm like, I can't do this. No.
I've never been to a karaoke night. Well, it's not true. I've been to karaoke nights. I've never sang at a karaoke night.
You should come out to a karaoke night with us sometime. Jake loves when I sing Zappa.
The world loves when you sing Zappa.
Okay, so I'm going to derail a tad here. There is one song by Frank Zappa that I absolutely love. It's off the ever offensive album Chic Your Booty. Yes, that was a title. It's the third track on the album. It's called Broken Hearts Are for Assholes. And it's one of my favorites of his, just because it's just basically, get over it, stop being a butt, kind of thing.
Nice.
And Jake and I were out with a group one night over at, who was that? Where was that at the?
Oh, I don't remember the name of the bar.
It was someplace in like Maryville, I think.
Yeah.
And I went up to the guy and he's like, are you going to sing? And like, you guys have been listening. I'm obviously into Primus. I'm into Zappa, those kind of things. So I like the weird shit. Love the weird shit. And so I was like, do you have any Frank Zappa tunes? And he just so happened to have Broken Hearts Are for Assholes. And I went up and I sang it. Nobody really knew what to expect. Jake, you were part of the audience.
The bar just stopped doing what they were doing because... I mean, it's a 6-minute song.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the lead up to it, I completely butchered the Sublime song. I went up to sing Santeria, and I completely butchered Santeria, and I was like, how do I redeem myself? So I go up.
Don't practice Santeria.
Yeah, so I go up and sing Broken Hearts Are for Assholes by Frank Zappa, and half the bar loved it, and the other half the bar was very confused. And I'm pretty sure... Ray was out with us, wasn't he, that day?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I scared his wife away from the bar with that song, so I apologize.
Well, the guy that was running the karaoke said, he's like, I think that's the first time anyone's ever done that ever anywhere.
And like, so 2 weeks later, we
made
it out.
Why do I even have this song in my list?
Right,
2 weeks later, we made it out again, and I did it a second time. And it didn't quite have the same resonance. I was kind of sad about that. But anyway, so yeah, that was Harold the Rock.
Go out there, I'm doing straight Journey.
It was the amount of nervous energy that you had, but sheer 100% dedication.
Oh, I know. I knew the lyrics.
You refused to not give it your all. It was what got the first one over, I think.
So good.
Anyhow.
The problem is that if I was ever going to go out and do karaoke, I'd need to know what key the song was in.
That's fair. They usually tell you at the opening of the thing.
Mm.
Sometimes. Okay, so we've listened to the Rhinosaurus Ball song. That was Harold the Rocks. So track 13.
It's another short one.
Yes. Well, so I don't know. I believe I mentioned this to you earlier in the night. So you know how you go to a show on, you go to like a show at the Fox. That's like, some stage production. They always have like the overture where they play like excerpts from various pieces,
yes.
As people are getting in to sit down and everything. Well, this is kind of like that, but at the very end of the album. And Primus does this, I believe, just about every one of their albums, if not all of them. It's usually based off of the first track only, and it takes like a snidbit, like a tidbit out of the title, and that's, it. But it's kind of a restructuring of that. So just go ahead and play the entirety of track 13 because that's how the album closes out, and it's going back to the first track again. And I think it's kind of an interesting circular kind of thing.
Now, you did tell me that there is a 14th track on the remastered version, right?
That is what's on here, yes. That one is Hello Skinny and Constantinople. No, it's not the They Might Be Giants song. I know, boo, whatever.
It's not the We Go to Constantinople.
No, it's not that. It's so Hello Skinny is one of Primus's original tunes. That's like the first 30-40 seconds of it. And Constantinople is actually a cover of a group called The Residents. And I believe they were, from what I understand, they were one of the other heavier influences to Primus's earlier work.
Ah.
So just go ahead and play 13 and go into 14 with it. Why not?
All right. Let's do it. Here we go. One way to end an album on the remastered version.
Yeah. I believe before that it had only ever been played live. I didn't even quite get to the cover. My bad. I thought it was a shorter bit.
No, it's not. That's. I think it's a great way to end it. Either way.
No, I love the guitar lines that Larry does whenever they do these like kind of slower jams.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, because it's nice to hear him just kind of diddle around and go crazy or whatever, but it's also really interesting whenever he just kind of plays these strange melodies. And I guess not even really melodies. I don't know what you'd classify them as.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. We've gone through Frizzle Fry by Primus. And I think I'm ready to sort of give my review, right?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So this was my cold listen through this album. I'd listened to some stuff from Primus, but I never listened to like any of these songs. All right. So I certainly appreciate what these guys do. They're the intricacies of their music, the level of skill that they all have, their ability to form together what seems like chaos and make it just fit together so beautifully is amazing in and of itself. But at the same time, this is not an album that I will listen to on a regular basis.
I mean, that's fair.
And well, it's because
it's it's just different strokes for different folks.
I'm not going to sit here and be like, nope, I don't like that, because I do like it.
Right.
And if anybody were to say that, no, oh, Primus sucks, I would defend Primus. But at the same time, you know, I'm not going to be like going out there. I'm not going to be like listening to this album on my drive to work tomorrow.
It's funny that you mentioned that. It's funny that you say Primus sucks. That was actually whenever they went out and toured for their early years. That became like the kind of tagline, like, you know, you get on t-shirts and all that stuff. Cause, a lot of people, you know, the diehard fans like me are like really into it, you know, and it's just, that's just, you know, we like that kind of chaotic sound, like you mentioned, but a lot of people don't really care for that. So, you know, it just kind of became this joke among the band. And then like, there's, you know, footage from like Ozfest of 94, I think.
Yeah,
They played with Buckethead at that tour, on that tour or whatever, and like, you know, Les Claypool opens, you know, up saying, you know, it's like, you know, we have a history of being of sucking, you know, something like that, and then like they go into like they play these ridiculous like riffs or whatever, and people are just, you know, it's just kind of an inside joke they used to have. People don't say it so much anymore, but I thought that was interesting that you.
Well, there you go.
You made that point.
So, Jake, where does this rank as far as, like, your Primus albums, or any album for that matter?
Well, considering that this is the band's, like, initial release.
Yeah.
Even though, like, the Suck on This Live album, like I said, it was kind of a demo.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually released before this one. The band's kind of had this tumultuous history of having trouble finding a label and getting things done, but then not being able to get it released. This is like such an ambitious album for like such a young band and to do so early.
Yeah.
So like I want to commend them on that, just as musicians, like, yeah, just taking a chance at doing what you want to do.
Yeah.
That being said, however, I don't think it's their best album kind of by far. Like when we had kind of initially just thrown this idea around, I said, like, if we're not doing Sailing Seas of Cheese, we're doing it wrong. I don't know if that's really their best album either. I think the masterstroke of Primus is probably Antipop.
For me, it's Tales from the Punch Bowl.
Really?
Yeah. Well, that was also Tim's last album. Yeah, he's my favorite of the drummers, so it's
just
kinda,
with all the like collaborations on Antipop and the studio work in it is just.
That's a fantastic album. Don't get me wrong.
It's such a good album.
I love Brain. Brain's a great drummer, Tim's just got, he's got me.
I mean, I'm probably going to put Suck on This into a CD player and play it before I'm going to put this in.
Yeah.
Just because it's a live album and I know the arrangements better. Not saying that they are better, just that I know them better.
It's what you're...
Right.
Yeah, I got you.
But that's not to diss on this album. I really enjoyed this. I had fun with it. Thank you for bringing it in.
No, I wanted to bring in like the first album just kind of as like this, you know, because a lot of people don't, you know, you listen to something like this, you don't think this is a first album by any means.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you got to think, you know, people are usually want to like try and get out the more quote unquote normal sounding stuff to get people interested in whatever they're doing first, right? You know, it's like.
There's almost nothing normal about this, though.
Right. If you really listen to Frank Zappa did Freak Out with the Mothers of Invention in 1966, I think it was. And that's, you know, a very strange album in and of itself. But, you know, he was still very into, like, this kind of doo-woppy stuff and all that stuff earlier on. He didn't get, like, he got weirder as time went on, but he didn't really start out being, you know, what people know of Frank Zappa today. Whereas Primus has kind of always just been Primus.
Yeah.
I don't know, and I guess that's not fair to say. Like, Frank Zappa's always been Frank Zappa, obviously, but I guess what I associate his later stuff with versus his earlier stuff, like, there's obviously a difference.
Yeah, yeah, but from this, I mean, from the track one, it's a fully formed Primus album.
Right. And that being said, like, the band did grow over time.
Right.
but it's always had this kind of essence to it, if that makes any sense.
Makes sense to me.
So that being said, you should go listen to the Willy Wonka album. It's pretty great.
I most certainly will.
It's pretty great.
Just because I know Jessica talks about it, so.
Props to Jessica.
Yes, yes. My wife, the progressive music listener that she is. Either way, folks, thanks for listening to Follow the Sound. This was an interesting album review for me because it's something that we have never even contemplated doing, which is why I'm glad Carl brought it in because, you know, Carl likes different kinds of music than me. So I want him to express that, and then I want other people to listen to it and enjoy it for what it is, you know, because what I like isn't what other people like necessarily, and what Carl likes isn't what other people like. What Jake likes, other people may not like or may like. You know, everybody has their own choices in their music. But like I say at the end of the show, you know, we have to follow the sound and see wherever it leads. And if you don't go out there and you don't listen to stuff, then you're never going to find out if you, one, like it or not, and two, whether it can lead to something that you actually really love. And that's what we do here for this show. So I have been your host, Brian Kroc. Along with me has been Jacob Crum.
Most folks agree she was a living hell. And the ever-growing slices of fortune and fame, now on the coattails of a dead man she rides.
Yes!
And, of course, Carl Stegman.
Thanks for having me, and I'm going to go jam on some Isley Brothers tunes.
My name is Mud. Remember, if you hear it, follow the sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.